Hi, everyone. My name's Tara, and we're here to celebrate the release of Dez's new collection, Stronger Together. Y'all want to give Dez a round of applause?
Oh, wow. Damn. You didn't have to make him do that.
It's a dope collection.
Thank you.
So, do you want to just intro yourself real quick?
Okay. First of all, let me thank everybody for coming. My name is Desmond. Some people call me Dez Money. From Chicago, and I just want to welcome you all to my mixtape release. This is a mixtape listener, actually. But no, I'm a Chicagoan, born to Ghanaian immigrants, and right now, as a profession, I'm a creative. I would call myself a creative.
I mean, you wear a lot of hats, though. I guess creative is like a nice way to.
Yeah, it's just like it's tough for me to be like I'm a designer or I'm a photographer because you know I feel like I still got a lot of work to do. You know what I'm saying? I have so much respect for those professions that it's like you know what I'm saying? I don't feel comfortable just yet. You know what I mean? But all in all, I'm gonna say I'm a creative.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Chicago. Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Chicago, on the South Side. In a neighborhood called Burnside. So Burnside is right by Chatham. So think about 87th and Cottage Grove. Think about Chicago State. Think about the rink. I grew up in that area. Stayed there, so I was about like 18. Flipside. Wow, yeah, Flipside. That was actually like the name of the deck. So I grew up around a lot of GDs. a lot of folks. Actually, my half brother. So. To kind of like, I guess, because, you know, this collection is kind of a piece of my life, you know what I'm saying? So if I'm talking too much, y'all can tell me to stop talking, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, so like my half-brother, I have a half-brother. I consider him my full-brother, but he's my half-brother. But my dad came from Ghana in like 73, and then he brought my mom in 75. But like, in between bringing my mom, he met somebody else, and she was an African-American or whatever, and that's how I had my brother. But the only reason I'm talking about him is because he was GD, you know what I'm saying? So that's how I, like, learned about the folks and all of that in my neighborhood.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did your parents come to America?
So my dad ended up coming to America because they just, you know, when you grew up in Africa, I think you kind of look at the Western world as, like, the gold mine. It's like, you know, you think about opportunity, you think about money. And my grandfather, my dad's father, had passed probably like in 71 to 72. And my grandfather actually had like he owned a construction company. But some crazy shit happened where like as soon as my grandfather passed, like his best friend and somebody else basically took the ownership from my dad and like the rest of his brothers and shit. So my dad was just like, forget it. I'ma just, you know, go to school and you know, go to the US and try to figure out my life. And that's kind of the reason why he decided to go, just to kind of find better life.
So your mom joined him.
So crazy enough, this is like crazy. My dad actually met my mom maybe 2 or 3 days before he came to America.
Oh.
Yeah, it's super wild. Yeah, he was actually in Kumasi, which is a city in Ghana, and they were like on a bus to come to Accra, which is the capital of Ghana. And he was with his niece. He said I think his niece was like 5 or 6 years old at the time. And he saw my mom, and I think he liked her, you know what I'm saying? He saw her, and he basically had his niece go up to my mom and tell her that, yo, my uncle digging on you, you know what I'm saying? He trying to rock with you, you know what I'm saying? And that's kind of how they started. But my dad was about to bring this other girl over because my dad had a girlfriend, but... my dad had a girlfriend at the time, but he met my mom, and they kind of like, you know, started, you know, they started writing each other.
I was gonna ask how they communicated.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So they were writing, because there's no cell phones or anything at that time, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like early 70s. So they was writing each other, and the girl that he was supposed to bring ended up like basically cheating on him with his homie at the embassy that was supposed to get her to come to America. So once he found that out, he was just like,
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, it was wild. It was wild. I wasn't expecting to say all this, but yeah, it was super wild, super wild.
Are you putting your family on blast?
Yeah, but I mean, it's like this is my story though. You know what I'm saying? This is how I ended up being born in Chicago. Because if that shit didn't happen, you know what I'm saying, I probably would have been born in Ghana. You know what I'm saying?
So he came to Chicago immediately, or?
Yeah, so I think back then, and I might be, somebody can fact check me, but I think back then Ghana was flying through D.C. or either to New York or D.C. So he ended up flying to New York to Chicago, or he flew to D.C. to Chicago. But he came straight to Chicago, and he actually went to, because his initial plan was to come here and go to school and you know, do some business shit or whatever. So he ended up going to Malcolm X College. But my grandfather had like 23 kids and like three women, or three wives, I'm sorry. He had like three wives and like 23 children, and my pops was like the second oldest. So, you know, in the African culture, you know, when you're the older, you know, the sibling or whatever, you are looked upon to take care of the rest of the family. So he wasn't making no money for real. So he decided to, you know, get a job or whatever and put school aside.
Okay, so what did he end up doing?
So he ended up working at they call it it's a profession called hiking, but it's really that's like the profession, that's like the $10 word for parking cars. They call it hiking, I believe. So he worked with this company called General Parking. But before that, he was also he had started his own business, which I didn't even know about. But he was like one of the first Africans in Chicago to open up like an African shop. So he was getting like Ghanaian drums, Ghanaian jewelry.
On the south side.
It might have been up north. I have to fact check. But I think it might have been up north. But he was like one of the first people to have his own African shop. But the thing was, at this time in the early 70s, a lot of black people here wasn't into the African culture yet. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that interest came. And again, this is a conversation for everybody. So like y'all can fact check me. I don't think the interest came really, you know, in terms of like the Pan-Africanism and all of that, came into like maybe like mid-70s, you know, because I think
so he was like a couple years before that.
Exactly, because my dad was probably like amongst the first wave of Ghanaians to come from Ghana to America, because there was already Ghanaians here, but it was nowhere near the population it is now. You know what I'm saying? Because that's like early 70s.
Yeah. Were they all up north?
At this time, nah. I think that's probably like more of like an 80s or 90s thing. Because at this time, my pops got crazy stories about him like getting robbed on a train, like living in 63rd, like right where the University of Chicago is, like in that area. It's like a little project over there. But he like, I think he started off moving over there. But I think as the years continued and more Ghanaians came from overseas, I think the north side kind of became like that section where a lot of Africans live.
So what did your mom do when she came over?
They did a lot of common jobs. You know, my mom did like some house cleaning. You know, she did a lot of, you know, I guess basic stuff. But the job that she kind of stayed in for a while was being a bank teller at South Shore Bank, which is like a old South Side black bank that was here for like maybe 20 plus years. But I think they got bought out like right when Obama came in the office. But yeah, she was a bank teller for like most of my childhood. But then like they got bought out and they basically like started like laying everybody off, and she was a part of that that situation. Mm-hmm. That got laid off.
And you have like a lot of sisters, right?
Yeah, I got three sisters. I have one older sister. I have two older sisters and then one baby sister. And two of them actually went with me to the Ghana trip.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do they do anything creative or similar?
They have creative like capabilities, but right now two of my sisters teach, and then my baby sister, she's in the health field. Yeah.
What was it like growing up first generation on the South Side? Were you around a lot of other first generation kids or?
Nah, I grew up in the hood. You know what I'm saying? I grew up on the South Side, so you know, like my neighborhood wasn't the worst, but you know, they called it Flipside because a lot of gang activity always went on around there. You know, Flipside was basically like it got that name because sometimes the BDs would be over there, sometimes you know the Moes would be over there, and if you was living in that area, you might flip to being a GD. You know what I'm saying? So that's what like the whole moniker of Flipside comes from. But you know, growing up there as a first generation Ghanaian, you know, everybody looked at me like the African kid. You know what I'm saying? But I was a cooler kid, you know, and I say cooler in the sense of like I played basketball, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I think when you I think culturally speaking, like when you can do a certain type of activity that the culture relates to, you kind of become of that culture, you know what I mean? So growing up on the South Side was, you know, I blended in, you know what I'm saying? But I was always still that African kid, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I wore different clothes sometimes, you know what I'm saying?
You ate weird stuff at lunch.
I ate weird stuff. I ate jollof rice, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, weird, yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Definitely. I feel you. And even my parents, like, you know, when my parents would pull up to, like, you know, a teacher's conference or, you know, just pick me up from, like, from basketball practice, and they would hear, like, my dad or my mom speak, and they would speak with a heavy accent, you know, everybody would be looking around like, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, what did he just say? You know what I mean? But, you know, I tried to, not say to play both sides, but I tried to understand both sides. You know what I mean?
I think that's important. Mm-hmm. We all have to, like, assimilate, kind of, even though that's kind of bullshit.
Definitely. And, you know, I think one thing that I didn't want to do growing up was I didn't want to forget about, like, the culture, you know what I'm saying, my culture at the crib. You know, I always wanted to figure out, like, how to bring my friends over and have them eat food with me, you know what I'm saying?
Were they cool with it?
Some of them were, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, you know, as a kid, you don't even know that your culture is cool until you get older. At least I didn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, so, you know, when somebody call you, like, an African booty scratch or some shit, you know, you feel away, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I think I was fortunate enough to be in situations where I was around a lot of extracurricular programs that really, I guess, encouraged me to accept my culture and to be proud about it.
Like what?
So it's like a whole another section. But I grew up.
Real quick.
Yeah, real quick. So I grew up going. I went to a school called Betty Shabazz. So I don't know. I got a couple of my. Yeah, I got some. Some Betty Shabazz alumni in here, you know. But Betty Shabazz is located right now. It's two campuses, but the second campus was on 78th and Ellis. And the cool thing about Betty Shabazz is that it's an African-centered school.
So you grew up with, kind of, with people, other other African kids? No?
Not necessarily. You know, I think What a lot of people don't know about Chicago is that I guess what some people refer to as ERFs. Have you heard that term before?
No.
So ERFs are what you call, like, or what some people refer to as people that grow up, like, maybe in an African-centered culture, you know, and African-centered thinking or African-centered education. And y'all can help me out, my people's in here. African-centered education is basically based on the idea of Black people come from Africa. You know what I'm saying? So no matter if
it's like the Pan-African.
It's the whole Pan-African diaspora thing. You know
what
I'm saying?
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. And I want to say it was probably led by Marcus Garvey, as well as, like, you know, pioneered by, you know, people like Kwame Nkrumah and Malcolm X. But, you know, the main idea was to teach that, you know, slavery fucked us up. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, we come from greatness. You know, so just imagine, you know, Black people in America trying to find their lineage and accepting those traditions and those cultures of or the cultural ways of, you know, Africa. You know what I mean? So I grew up in all of that. So I grew up playing, you know, a lot of West African drum, you know, whether it was from Ghana or from Senegal or Ivory Coast. You know, so that was like reinforcement. And that taught me early on that, you know, if my brother on Woodlawn or Cottage Grove wasn't necessarily from Ghana, he was still my brother because we're still connected, you know what I'm saying? Because at some point in his ancestry or his lineage, you know what I mean, he comes from Africa, you know what I'm saying? Or we all Black at the end of the day, you know what I mean? So that going to that school really got my thinking, I feel like, in order because, you know, I feel like the struggle of, you know, African-Americans or Black people in America is real, you know what I'm saying? I think a lot of times that disconnection happens. That disconnection is real when it comes to Africans being born in Africa because they don't necessarily understand, you know, the Jim Crow law or, you know, the civil rights era. You know what I'm saying? So,
I mean, they don't view each other the same, right? Africans in America and Black people.
Some don't. You know what I'm saying? But to me, you know, I think that's I think that's an effect of what slavery and colonization did. You know what I mean? Because to even to me, I feel like the term African and African American is divisive. I get what it means. You know what I'm saying? But I think because of that term, it's there's a disconnect there. You know what I'm saying? I feel like, you know, we have to kind of reconnect that. You know what I'm saying? And it's not like it doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like the reconnection has started or it's happened already, but we got to kind of continue it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about it, but I really think that
I'm trying not to, like, skip over it.
You're doing good. So did you, I mean, I feel like I talked to a lot of first-generation kids or, you know, that in the home, it's their culture is very present, but when they go outside, you know, it's they have to, like, integrate themselves into whatever American culture. Did you feel that way? Was your culture very present at home and then, you know, you had to leave the house and, like, kind of reacclimate?
I would say so. I mean, I think it was a little bit of both, you know, because, like, I was that kid that was into performing arts, you know what I mean? So, you know, I know how to dance, like, certain Ghanaian traditional dances, you know what I'm saying? But then I also knew how to hoop, you know what I mean? So, for me, you know, I think it was about, it was just a learning process, you know, trying to, like you're saying, like how you said before, just trying to assimilate, you know what I mean? And, you know, really be a part of both cultures, you know what I'm saying? And, like, now that I'm older, I'm trying to figure out how to mix those cultures and bring that together, you know what I'm saying? But I feel like at the end of the day, you know, the values that I had in my house, I carried those with me, you know, when I left the crib, too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That's the thing about assimilation, though. It kind of makes you, I don't know, when I was growing up, made me embarrassed of, like, my culture, you know? Yeah. Did you ever feel that way? I mean, I guess you were kind of in spaces where, you know, like you said, it was reinforced, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, it was points where, like, because, like, even, like, it's crazy. So, like, you know, there's certain words that, like, are said in your household, and you growing up as a kid, you know, you may not know how to properly say something or properly say something because your mom might say something a certain type of way.
Or a different language.
Yeah. So if my mom says a certain word a certain type of way, I might think that's the right way to say it.
Oh, you're talking about pronunciation.
Yes. So, like, if I go outside and say that same word,
don't make fun of you.
My homie's going to laugh at me. Like, bro, what you saying? So, like, a perfect word is, like, khaki. Like, the color khaki. The way Ghanaians pronounce it, or, you know, people of African culture, they call it khaki. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think I was outside one time and my homie had on some shorts. I'm like, yo, look at those khaki shorts. You know what I'm saying? They're like, bro, like, what are you saying right now? I'm like, the khaki shorts. You know what I'm saying? So, like, little shit like that kind of, like, made me, like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Made me kind of go into my shell a little bit, but I, you know, one thing about me, I feel like I've always had good friends. Like, my friends would laugh at me, but, like, you know, they wouldn't, like, you know, put me down. You
right,
know what I'm
saying? Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. So, I mean, hip-hop culture is pretty central to your work, too.
Definitely.
When did you discover hip-hop, or who was, like, the first, you know, artist you discovered?
So I have two older sisters, and my older sister is, she's 40. My older sister is 37 now, or 36. So growing up under them, I was already, like, you know, Biz Markie was playing, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think they said that I used to always walk around the house singing, she say she's just a friend. She, you know, because at that time, like, the box was popping, you know what I'm saying? I don't know how many of y'all know what the box is, but, you know, the box was popping. MTV was still around. I don't think BET was around at that point. But I got exposed to all of that, you know, through my sisters. They also play, like, a lot of Lauryn Hill, a lot of Erykah Badu. But my pops, like, always got vinyls. Like, every Friday, he used to go to this African record shop on, like, 83rd, and he would get, like, all of the new shit. So I would have, like, my pops would have, like, LL Cool J vinyls. He would have The Beatles, you know what I'm saying? He would have a whole bunch of, like, James Brown. So I've always got exposed to music through my dad and through my sisters.
Did it affect how you dressed? Or?
Oh, yeah. And the thing, too, my pops was cool. You know, like, my pops...
I mean, he sound cool. He sound like a player,
maybe. My pops was player, man. Yeah. Like, you know, he used to... My pops used to give me Jordans, you know what I'm saying? Like, under a real finesse way, too. Like, it was this one... City Sports. there's one City Sports that's on 87, but like now it was like a beauty salon. So basically it was like these Asian cats or these Korean dudes or whatever that ran it. And they had a black dude working the floor. And my dad was cool with the black dude. So what he would do is he would buy one sneaker or whatever from like the register. And then the black dude that worked the floor would go to the back, cuff like two pairs or whatever, and put it in his pants or in his shirt. And then him and my dad would come out to store, and my dad would give him money, and he would give us the shoes. Some real crazy
wow.
shit. Yeah, it was super, super,
and nobody's
super
checking like, inventory.
Nah, I mean, back then it's like yeah, 90s, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. I think they was, you know, they probably weren't paying attention. But my pops was always like hip to the culture, you know, like, because he was into music, you know what I mean? And I feel like with music and the art, that's one tool to, you know, to bring the world together, no matter like what color, you know what I'm saying, what religion you are. That's one thing I feel like that that connects everybody, you yeah. know what I'm saying?
How did you use fashion as a tool for self-expression?
I mean, in the African culture, you know, you gotta look good. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like if my mom would have come in here right now, my mom would probably have on like 8 rings, you know what I'm saying? A full like top and bottom, you know what I'm saying? Like I've always just been around, you know, people that like to look good, you know, because the idea is if you look good, you feel good, you know. And my mom used to always dress me up, you know what I mean? She used to dress me up in like 3-piece suits.
When you were little?
Yeah, when I was little. I got like crazy pictures. I don't know if I have them here. It might be some on the board. Yeah, but my mom used to like, because I'm my mom's only son. So I feel like she used to look at me and be like, oh, I'm going to dress him up. This, you know what I'm saying? This is like my little doll or whatever, you know. So with her, and she asked, my mom probably helped me get my nickname Des Money low-key too. Because when I was younger, she would dress me up and we would go to like these African functions. And my aunties were like, they would like kind of like go crazy on me. Like, oh my God, look how he's dressed. You know, he looks amazing. And they, you know, in African culture, like when you do something good, people reward you with like a dollar or something like that. You know what
so
I mean?
So if you're dressed well, you get a dollar.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You get some bread or you get encouraged. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's the idea behind it, you know.
Yeah, you get gas, yeah.
Yeah, you get gas, you know, they was gassing me up as a kid, you know. And so I would be this kid that like might be walking around the African function with like $5. For a kid, that's amazing. You know what I'm saying? So like, you know, my uncle's around or whatever, they would call me Osikeni. And Osikeni in Tree, which is like the native tongue or the native language for Ghana, means money man. You know what I mean? So I always kind of like kept that name around me. You know what I'm saying? So in high school, I was like D-Money or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And as I grew up, like, hey, let me just kind of stick to my roots and, you know, keep something that's already been with me. So that's how Des Money kind of came around.
What was your first foray into making clothes? Were you doing that in high school?
No, I was actually, my first time making clothes was probably when I was like 21. Me and my cousins had started a brand called Nerdy.
Oh, right.
So that's like when Nerdy happened. And that all of that kind of sparked from me going to Leaders when Leaders was located on 43rd and Cottage, if I'm not mistaken. But I was looking for these one shoes called Greedy Genius. I don't know if anybody remember what Greedy Geniuses are. Yeah, them shoes actually look terrible now. But you know, I couldn't find them. And I think I found out the only location that had them was Leaders through this site called Nice Kicks. That's back when Nice Kicks was like, wasn't even what it is right now. You know what I'm saying? But that's how I found out. I went to Leaders and I walked in Leaders and I was just like, damn, this shit looks crazy. Because I had no idea what streetwear was. You know what I mean? So walking into there, like seeing, I think the first person I saw was like Vic, Mike Hundreds, and they was playing cool music. You know what I'm saying? I'm walking in there like, damn, like this is a different world, you know? Mm-hmm. And that kind of like really gave me my exposure to like what streetwear was, and it motivated me to try to do my own.
So talk about, you said Nerdy.
Yeah. So Nerdy was my cousin Nana and my other cousin Eddie. Well, that was like our baby. We kind of like, We tried to, you know, do a brand. We did a brand, you know what I'm saying? We were actually, like, probably, we was the youngest brand in Leaders to have, like, clothes inside of there. And that was, like, a big thing in, like, 2013 or 2012 or some shit like that. It was huge for us. But that was, like, our first exposure to, like, streetwear, you know what I mean? Leaders, I think a lot of times Leaders don't really get enough credit, you know what I'm saying, for, you know, being like a birthplace of streetwear, I would like to say, you know what I'm saying, at least in Chicago, you know what I mean, because for a lot of us, I feel like, you know, Leaders was like our supreme in a way, you know what I mean, but that's where we met Vic, that's where I met Terrell, that's where I met Joe, you know, that's where all like the kids that wanted to do something different was going, you know what I'm saying? Like, I learned about Vic Mensa through there, you know what I'm saying? That was like our gateway, that was like a clubhouse, you know what I mean, to do something that we thought was cool and try to make it into something.
I feel like you carry that tradition here too, that clubhouse kind of feel.
Definitely. I feel like, you know, it's almost like a barbershop type of situation where it's like, you know, you get to come here, hang out, talk shit, you know what I'm saying, and, you know, meet cool people.
So you worked there or interned there, right?
No, so we was just like, that's what I'm saying. Leaders was kind of like, Leaders was like a clubhouse, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you just hung out.
Yeah, we just hung out. If you had money, you could buy a shirt, you know what I'm saying, at that time. But like, you know, we would like meet up at Leaders, you know what I'm saying? We used to also, at that point in time, Vic was working there. So we used to like stay there with Vic every day and just like bug Vic and ask him hella questions about streetwear and like, what should we do, man? Should we make some pins?
It's like an informal internship.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't intern with Leaders. I interned with Joe and Terrell.
Okay.
Probably like maybe starting 2011 when I came back and graduated from college.
But you were studying like some science, you majoring some science.
Yeah,
course,
so my
right?
Yeah, exactly. So my parents are African, you know what I'm saying? So like, you know, for immigrant parents, you know, typically want their children to be engineers, doctors,
right.
You know what I mean?
Just because same.
They,
yes.
Yeah, you know, yeah. So they don't want their children to struggle, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I was trying to make my parents happy, and I was majoring in biology and my minor was psychology. So that's what I graduated with. So you're nothing dealing with fashion at all.
But then you dropped out?
Yeah, so I got I did a year at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, because I wanted to become a doctor. I wanted to be an obstetrician, but it just wasn't. I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't find like any joy in it, you know. And plus, at this time too, we was doing nerdy. You know what I'm saying? We had our first pop up, you know, at Leaders. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I felt like I wanted to do something else, but then I was like, you know what? I don't really want to make my parents unhappy, so let me stay in school. You know what I mean? But at this time, I'm like 22, and, you know, I'm becoming a man. So in my head, I'm like, I don't got to do what my parents want no more. You know what I'm saying? So that's when I went home, and I was like, you know what? Mommy, Daddy, I'm not going to go to school anymore. I'm going to try to pursue my arts. And they blew the fuck up. They like, you know, they like, my mom is like a very, she's a very like calm, like very, she's social, but like, she may not lash out until like some shit gets really, really like crazy. But like, as soon as I gave her the news, she was like distraught. She like went and found a seat, you know, in the living room and was just like rocking back and forth. You know what I'm saying? And my pops is like super teased. So he was like, he was just saying all type of shit like, I don't know why I came to America. Why? What's wrong with you? What's, you know what I'm saying? He was like going nuts. You know what I mean? But, you know, I felt like in my mind, I'm 22. I'm like, shit, I got to, you know, do what my heart tells me to do. And at this point, you know, I was interning with Terrell and Joe, like just working parties, running errands with them and, you know, still trying to come up with designs and stuff like that for nerdy. You know what I mean? So that's where my heart was at. And at this point, I was kind of really like, and becoming an artist and like reading about like, you know, all these miracle stories where people like quit their jobs and, you know what I mean? So I was just super charged and super teed. And I'm just like, I'm going to just go ahead and do my own thing.
I mean, if that's not the age to do it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't encourage nobody to drop out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to be that person. You know what I'm saying? But that is that age where you kind of start feeling like independent.
I mean, you're coming into your own, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. You know what I'm saying? You start feeling yourself.
So when did y'all start kind of forming Fat Tiger?
So I started interning with Terrell and Joe when they had a brand called Vita Morte. This was probably like around 2011, I think. And I stayed with them. We always worked together. And around like 2013 was when we kind of started Fat Tiger. But at this time, when Fat Tiger started, I was still like I was more like a seasoned intern. I wasn't like a partner or anything like that. But around 2013 is where, you know, I think, you know, Terrell Joe got kind of confident and was like, you know, hey, you know what, we can do our own store. You know what I'm saying? We have a brand that's strong in Chicago, and we can actually have a storefront and try to make something happen. So that's when we got the Rockwell store, which was like on a corner of Congress Theater in Logan Square. And that was like, yeah, that was 2013. That was like the birth of Fat Tiger. Black Friday 2013.
So Squad is your line. How did you kind of ideate that and that came about?
So Squad came around like during that first year in Fat Tiger. You know, I was still doing Nerdy, but at this point, my two partners, Nana and Eddie, they were like, you know, we were all growing up. So, you know, when you have a group, you know what I'm saying? When it's a group, like it's a rap group or whatever it is, everybody kind of has their own interests. And at that point, you know, I think they had some different things that they wanted to do. But me, I was working at Fat Tiger, so I'm like, shit, I got to try to figure out a way for me to kind of keep things going. So I think I released a collection under Nerdy, but then after that, I was just trying to come up with some ideas to kind of, you know, kind of springboard my brand or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And I started off with the Squad design on an orange towel. Yeah, so it was like, it was basically like the Squad. So Squad, the type of font it was in is it's the same font that Nike uses, which I think is like Futura. So I basically used that and I flipped the swoosh sign. And it's like an upside down Nike or whatever, upside down swoosh sign. But like that whole idea came from just like me growing up around, you know, GDs and like being around like different brotherhoods. Because I also grew up like in this performing arts company called Spirits. Mm-hmm. I can get into that later, but it was basically an all male society that taught young black boys masquerade and drum traditions of West Africa. But I was always around brotherhood, you know what I mean? So I think subconsciously I was always trying to think of like, how do I make something that kind of brings everybody together, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm super like community based, you know what I'm saying? And at this point too, I think squad was like a popping word in the culture, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, hey, people like this word, let me try to figure out how to make this art or make this something that people want or whatever. So that's the retrospect of it. When I was in it, I probably was just like, this is some hot shit, let me just try to figure it out, you know what I'm saying? But I mean,
apply the meaning later.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like I feel like, you know, going back and like thinking about it now, I think that's kind of like where all the inspiration came from. Plus like my dad was buying me Nikes, that's all I wore, you know what I'm saying? Nike was damn near embedded in me as a kid. So no.
I mean, I think it also brings that spirit of family.
Definitely.
Which is very pervasive in your collection.
Definitely. Yeah. So, yes, the squad started from an orange towel. That's where it kind of, like, picked up heat. You know, that the one orange towel just kept selling out. I made, like, maybe 30 the first time, and it sold out. I didn't even know it was going to sell out. You know what I'm saying? But then I was like, all right, some energy behind it.
When did the slogan, "We All We Got," start?
That's
part of it.
That slogan kind of came around when, let me see. So Joe gave me that idea. Yeah, Joe actually was like, "Squad, we all we got." You know what I'm saying? He just kind of said it one day. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, damn, this shit, man, makes sense. You know what I mean? So after he kind of like woke me up, so I was like, you know what? Let me kind of keep this around. But it wasn't until like we got to our second location where another situation happened where Terrell was like, man, you should kind of roll with "We All We Got," man. That's like a good solid phrase or whatever. Because I always thought squad was going to phase out. You know what I'm saying? I was like, squad is one of those words. It was popping. You know what I'm saying? Even though squad is like a word that's been around for a long time. You know what I'm saying? Even like Squad Up with like Weezy, you know what I'm saying? And even back in the day, I learned when I was in Ghana that like they were using Squad like in the 80s. So I didn't know all of that, you know what I'm saying, beforehand.
That's cool layers to it, you know?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it was just like, I felt like Squad wasn't going to last. So I always wanted to kind of have something else that I felt was going to kind of be timeless, you know what I mean? And when Terrell kind of woke me up to that, I was like, you know what? I actually kind of need to push this or whatever. So it's kind of how I stuck with both of those. But now it's like they coincide with each other. It's like, it's almost like Nike, just do it. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's like one and the same.
How does your culture, I mean, before this collection, how did your culture appear in your work?
That's a great question. I just always try to keep a sense of community involved in my work. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always feel like the world is like bigger than just me, you know what I'm saying? And I think when you have a brand, that's like an obvious thing as well too. Like, you're not just making stuff for yourself, you know what I'm saying? And you know, growing up in the Ghanaian culture, you know, just in African culture in general, you know, the idea of family first, the idea of, you know, it takes a village, you know what I mean, to raise a child, you know, that's always been embedded in me, you know what I mean? So I think subconsciously as I made stuff, you know, it came out, you know what I mean? Because, like, I think one of my first popular designs was Chicago to the World Blow Up, and which to me is like a very prideful statement, you know what I mean? It's actually a statement that I believe originated with the GDs, you know what I'm saying? I think I used to, like, grow up, like, seeing that shit, you know, like, in the, like, because they used to tag it a lot. It'd be like GDN to the World Blow Up. But, you know, once I started making t-shirts, I was like, how do I make something that can kind of relate to everybody and not be so divisive? So I'm like, let me switch out GDN and put Chicago. You know what I mean? So I've always just tried to keep that idea of, like, togetherness around.
Yeah, because I feel like you were trying to go to Ghana and do this for, like, the past year.
Yeah.
You've kind of been building up to it.
Yeah, it's been a while. Like, even, you know, like, I feel like for a while it almost became a joke when, like, you know, people was like, oh, you're not really going to go, bro. You know what I'm saying? Because it took me a long time to kind of make it happen or whatever. But, you know, I really wanted to do it. So it was like I just figured out a way to get it done.
Well, why'd you want to do that?
The deeper I'm getting into, like, making clothes and dealing with fashion, you know, I just want to... I've been trying to figure out how to just tell my story more and really just try to come to one with who I am. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, fashion and streetwear has kind of become, like, a main medium or, like, a main channel for me to express myself. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I just been trying to figure out ways to kind of do that. And actually, another example, too, that kind of sparked this was... I don't know when he went, but this was like maybe 2013 when we was at the Rockwell store. Joe had went to Paris to shoot a lookbook for DBM. And I was like, damn, that's just actually kind of crazy. You know what I'm saying? So I think like maybe a year or two later, I was just like, damn. Because it always stuck with me. You know what I'm saying? And me and Joe used to be roommates too. And I think like one day I like came into the living room and was like, yo, bro, I think I'm gonna like steal a page out your book. And, go to Ghana, you know what I'm saying? And you know, that's kind of how it came about.
Oh, so you said that a while ago?
Maybe more than maybe a year, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't really like start like trying to like save up and like start designing for it to like maybe last year.
Yeah. And you took Brian with you?
Yes.
Shout out Brian.
Yeah. I took Brian Allen Lamb. Brian's not here. He's actually he actually stays in LA now. He just moved from Atlanta, but he is on tour with G-Eazy. Yeah, he's on tour with G-Eazy. Yeah,
but he really snapped on these photos.
Yeah, now Brian did it. Brian did his thing. Crazy thing too is if y'all don't know Brian Allen Lamb, Brian is a white guy, and not to make that a thing or whatever, but you know, I didn't really think twice. You know what I'm saying? Of like taking a white person with me because I don't. For me, you know, this is about art. I don't think it's about color or anything like that. You know, even though you know what I'm saying, the relationship between black and white people is not the best. You know what I'm saying? But I feel like, you know, it's a new time, you know what I'm saying? And we got to do better than, you know, what our ancestors did, you know what I'm saying? And me and Brian linked up, like, maybe in 2016 anyway, and we did a collection for Squad, and that shit came out crazy, too. So he was probably the first photographer that I told, like, yo, I'm going to go to Ghana.
He's probably one of the best in Chicago.
Yeah, I fuck with Brian. Yeah. Brian is legit. Yeah. Brian is really real.
He also porcelain. He, like... real white.
He is. I got some funny stories about Brian being in Ghana too, you know what I'm saying? But you know, I like bringing Brian, and it was crazy because when we was on a trip, you know, me and Brian had a little moment where we was at the bar, we was drinking a beer and whatever, and he was like, yo bro, man, thank you for really bringing me on this trip, you know what I'm saying? I know you could have picked some other people, you know what I'm saying, but I appreciate you, you know, sharing this experience with me and, you know, really bringing me out here. You know what I'm saying? And when we had that moment, I was just like, damn, you know what I'm saying? This is what it's about, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I feel like we, like I said before, we kind of got to fix the mistakes, you know what I'm saying, that our ancestors made, you know what I'm saying, and really just do better, you know what I'm saying, you know, and yeah, you know.
We mean be more inclusive?
I think so. I think being inclusive, if it makes sense, you know what I'm saying, and if you are working with like-minded people, you know what I'm saying, because a lot of times, too, you know, you still have, you know, people of other races go to, you know, Africa or whatever.
coming in. I have that like white savior complex.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Coming in under the like, let's exploit this shit. Let's finesse. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, I think you still have to be careful who you're working with, you know what I'm saying? But I feel like I'm fortunate enough to, you know, to be in a field where there's good people, good hearted people.
And it was a natural fit.
Definitely.
You know? Yeah.
Like I said, because me and Brian did like a really cool lookbook. He had did some stuff with the store too, you know what I mean? So we already had like a Chicago working relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the imagery you used, like from Nas, Bob Marley, Malcolm X, were those figures in your life growing up?
Yeah, definitely. I grew up listening to like a lot of Nas. Nas was like one of my favorite rappers, him and Jay-Z. So like, of course, when that beef happened, like I was distraught. You know what I'm saying?
Which side were you on, though?
Man, I was, to be real, to be honest, I'm not gonna lie. Even though I have a different perspective now, being older, I was on Nas's side because you know what I'm saying. Because I felt like Nas's response was way more funnier. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, and I could get all of his jokes at that point. You know, but then it's like, as a kid, you know what I'm saying? Or as an adult now, listening to Takeover and listening to Super Ugly, I feel like Jay might have won. You know what I'm saying? But that's, you know, that's a whole other conversation.
That's,
you know,
true. What
I mean? But going into like Bob Marley, Malcolm X, those are all people that I grew up with. That
and Kwame Nkrumah.
Those are all people that I remember growing up with that really preached the idea of linking black people up. You know,
Clips,
what I mean?
The Black Jesus.
Oh, the Clips. Yeah, of course. That's all hip hop. You know, I'm a hip hop baby. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, seeing that Clips album cover with them like riding through Virginia and having a Black Jesus in the back seat of their car, like kind of just holding it down, that always like stuck with me as a kid. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, these are just like my influences that help mold and shape me. You know what I mean? And I'm just happy I can kind of like express that now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really cool connection of like hip hop, history, culture, family, Chicago, Africa. That's really nice little melting pot.
It all comes together.
Yeah. So all the models you shot were from Ghana too.
Yep. So all the models that I shot were Ghanaian born, and they all stay in Ghana. Cause my whole idea with the collection was to really bridge the gap. You know, I wanna like really continue to work with like Maya Angelou, Malcolm X, Kwame Nkrumah, and really like bring black people together. No matter if you like black from Cuba, if you black from Chicago, if you black from Gambia, if you black from Ghana, I wanna like really create this relationship where it's like we can work with each other and we can get some bread with each other. You know what I'm saying? And open the market up. You know what I mean? Like I don't like, and like I said too, like even in my artist statement, it's not a new idea, you know what I'm saying? Like, Marcus Garvey was trying to get black people to go to Africa years ago, you know what I'm saying? But I think it's one of those ideas that kind of just needs to be updated and needs to be refreshed, you know what I mean? And, you know, with me dealing with fashion and the arts, I feel like that's one of the most subconscious, penetrable things that you can kind of like get through people without them even knowing what's going on. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's just one of those things. Like music, like you can be from Cuba, but when let me see, what's popping right now? What's a popping song? Let me see. What's a popping song right now? I don't even know. I'm drawing a blank. Guatemala by Sway Lee. You know what I'm saying? The whole Ray Strummer. You know what I'm saying? Like if you hear that, you know what I'm saying? Like you might just start rocking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I want the culture to be. I want it to kind of just be, I just want it to intercept and get into people. You know what I'm saying?
But it's also political. I mean, you have the president of Ghana on a shirt, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's politically driven too. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I don't want to be,
overhanded.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to be too preachy.
You know
what I'm saying? That's probably my biggest fear. Like, you know, I grew up with, you know, some black nationalists. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I, you know, and not to take anything away from that movement, because I feel like at a certain point in time, maybe that was needed for the culture. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I don't want to be that militant. You know what I'm saying? I want to be able to be digestible. You know what I'm saying? And be able to have conversation. You know what I'm saying? Because I think a lot of times, a lot of conversation isn't had. You know, that needs to be held or whatever. You know, so.
How do you use the collection to connect the African diaspora to hip-hop?
I mean, you know, with the figures that I picked, from, you know, Bob Marley to the Clips, like, I feel like those are all figures that have, especially Bob Marley, I feel like that's one figure who you can go anywhere in the world and they know who that is.
Right, it's pretty universal.
Definitely, yeah. definitely. So that's the one thing with when I try to make things. I try to make it universal, you know what I mean? Just so, like, we don't necessarily have to speak the same language or we don't have to come from the same area, but, like, you know, you can relate to this message or you can relate to this vibe, you know what I mean? And I feel like, you know, hip-hop is one of those things that has grown from New York all the way to, you know, across the world, you know what I'm saying? And it's just one of those things that helps connect people.
What's the hip-hop culture, you know, like the rap scene like over in Ghana?
And right now, Ghana's pretty lit. Ghana is popping right now. When I was there, I got a chance to meet some of the popping artists and some of the popular rap collectives as well. But a lot of the music is hip life. One group I met was called La Mem Gang, and they're like they cold. They got a lead artist by the name of Darko Vibes, and they're considered to be like, kind of like the odd future of Ghana right now, you know. But it was interesting, like, just like going into the studio with them, you know, and like seeing how they work, because it's the same way like if I go into the studio with a rapper here, you know what I'm saying? If I'm like I went to the studio a couple times with Lucky, you know what I'm saying? They, like, you know, some of the processes are the same, you know what I'm saying? I think what's even crazier too is the dress, you know what I'm saying? How you know, the fashion in Ghana. Like, I walked into the studio and the engineer that I met had on some Off-White, you know what I'm saying? And like some what's my man name that did those Air Maxes? I think we talked about that.
Oh, right? Sean Witherspoon.
Yeah, he had on some Sean Witherspoon Air Maxes, and I'm just like, damn, bro, how did you get those? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
right. You know, probably expensive.
You know what I mean? So yeah. it was cool to kind of see how the cultures are crossing, and I don't even feel like we even know it's happening, but it's already happening. You know,
yeah,
what I'm
that's
saying?
Really tight.
Thought that was cool.
And you also had the pop up. How
yeah,
was that?
Yeah. So that was crazy. Having a pop up in Ghana was like crazy for me, you know, because this is the first time I went to Ghana as an adult. I had been like three times when I was a kid or whatever, but I didn't really remember shit, you know what I'm saying? But like going back as an adult and actually like doing work in Ghana really like opened my eyes up to like a whole new world. But the pop-up was super lit. I had a lot of like rap music producers come out. A lot of, like, the creators came out, too, you know, because I was on a radio. I did, like, a radio interview while I was there, whatever, and the radio interview did well, and it got, like, people excited to come to the pop-up or whatever. But it was cool. We did it at, like, an outside venue. We had music out there. Had, like, a real cool setup. And the reception was, like, the reception is kind of what, like really, like, touched my heart, you know what I'm saying? I felt like, you know, everybody there was appreciative of me coming back to the crib to do something. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody came there, shook my hand, gave me a hug. You know,
I mean, it's an atypical thing, what you were doing.
I would say so. I mean, I look at it as, like, this is what I'm supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? But I think, you know, going there and, like, kind of seeing the reception, it was like, damn, this is actually kind of different. You know what I'm saying? I was born in the U.S., and I came all the way to Ghana to, like, you know, link up, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I realized how different it was, you know, while I was there and, you know, after the pop-up.
I mean, has that experience, I guess, maybe intensified the collection or, like, the meaning, the purpose, or, like, how are you moving forward with how you work?
Most definitely. Like, I mean, you know, even like, right after the pop-up, you know, I DM'd Terrell, like, man, bro, I think it'd be crazy if we do, like, a month pop-up or a month store, you know what I'm saying, out here, you know, out in Ghana, you know, just to kind of stay a little longer, you know what I'm saying? And 'cause the thing in Ghana right now is everything is just, like, bubbling, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of shit that's popping, you know, especially on the creative scene. You know, like, a lot of the kids are very, very creative, you know, and they're getting a lot of creative opportunities, you know what I'm saying? But I still didn't feel like it was a, like, one hub, like a Fat Tiger or like a, you know, whatever, like a RSVP, whatever you want to call it, you know what I'm saying? Where, like, the kids could kind of go to and, like, you know, hone in on their skills or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Socially, creatively, you know what I mean? So, you
know, seems like it's pretty new scene, probably.
I would say so, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Even though I'm kind of new to it myself, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I just think it's the internet. You know what I'm saying? I think the internet is really speeding up our connections. Like, it ain't no more pen pal. You know what I'm saying? Your pen pal is right. through Instagram. You can DM your pen pal now. You know what I'm saying? Or add him on Twitter. You know what I'm saying? So, like, everything has happened very, like, super fast. You know what I'm saying?
So, what's next for you?
What's next? Got some things coming up. We got a couple of projects coming up with Fat Tiger. We're going to be using the workshop space a lot more. Really, like, trying to take off with the workshop space. Starting some more programs where one thing we've been talking about is, like, kind of doing a brand incubator where, you know, we kind of help develop certain brand or, you know, growing brands in mm-hmm. Chicago, as well as just doing more workshops in terms of for the community, too, whether it's, you know, talking about design, whether it's talking about fashion 101, just everything, you know what I mean? And even doing art shows in here, too. We're just trying to figure out how we can open it up more and, you know, really get it cracking.
Well, congratulations on the collection and the lookbook and the pop-up. It was really dope.
Thank you.
Y'all want to give him another round of applause?
Thank you. And if y'all got, like, questions or anything, if y'all want to, like, say something, conversation, y'all can ask questions.
Yeah, if y'all got questions.
I have a question. What's up, bro?
There's a... Y'all want to be in the mic?
What's up? You want the mic? I think I need the mic.
Okay.
Can you walk us through the collection and your inspiration behind it? It looks very interesting based off your story. I think your collection tells the story as well.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know. I have a cordless mic, so I'm going to just talk.
Yeah, that's fine.
We got a cordless mic. We actually do. Okay, so everything that's over here... Let me see if I can break it up a little bit. All right, so I'm going to split it up. So in this section right here, this is basically what I took to Ghana for the pop-up. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to, like, basically mix the cultures. So this lady right here, she is... Are y'all familiar with that one Jamaica poster where it's, like, this beautiful lady coming out the pool and she's, like, dripping wet? Like, I feel like every country has, like, a tourist poster or whatever. So this is like Ghana's tourist poster, except that it says Akwaba, which means welcome in tree. You know what I mean? So I wanted to, like, kind of update that and flip it, and I put We All We Got. Because, you know, she's like that lady in everybody, like, Ghanaian house that's, like, on the wall in this picture frame that, like, when you see it, you come into the crib, it's like, welcome. You know what I'm saying? So it kind of fits under the brand or the moniker of We All We Got. I took this down there because, you know, I got to show love to the ladies, you know what I'm saying? Especially the Ghana. My mom's a Ghana girl, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, this is kind of where Chicago girls come from, you know what I mean? But I just wanted to, like, kind of show some love to the Ghana girls out there. As y'all know, FIFA was popping this year. It was the World Cup. So I did, like, I did a piece that paid homage to the 1970s Ghana soccer team. So Daffy Duck has on, like, the jersey that the Ghana Black Stars wore in the 70s. So on the back, I got, like, 57, which is the year that Ghana won their independence. Yeah. Huh? My bad. All right. Clips. So this is where the collection starts at right here. So the clips, I kind of talked about this a little bit. I feel like No Malice and Pusha was, like, you know, a big embodiment of, like, We All We Got, family first and all of that. And, like I said, what stuck with me as a kid was seeing a black Jesus. Like, that was, like, I never saw a black Jesus as a kid, you know what I mean? So that was, like, one thing that really, really stuck with me. This is a sample. This is, like, my slogan for the summer, working together to defeat the bullshit. And this is a project that I did. This is a jersey that I took out there, too. This was, like, I took, like, six of these. I bought them, like, randomly from, like, off eBay, maybe like a couple of, like, thrift stores. And what I did was I made a squad kente patch, and my idea basically was to kind of make, like, a squad sponsor jersey. So, you know, like, when you see, like, soccer kits or whatever, it might have, like, a bunch of different logos on it. This was, like, the, you know, the squad sponsor joint. Plus, Ghana didn't make the World Cup, you know what I'm saying? So I was just like, all right, I'm going down there during the World Cup season. Let me try to give, let me try to make a garment or something like that that Ghanaians can rock and be confident with. All right, so now we kind of going into the collection. I'm going to be brief because I know y'all got to go. But on the back, you got the Malcolm X joint. It's like, how can you not put Malcolm? You know what I'm saying? When you paying, because like I said, like the idea for this collection was to, you know, pay homage to, you know, all of those figures that inspired me to like bring black people together. And I think that was like a main part of Malcolm's work. I think like in 64 and 65, I heard he was having like secret meetings with like Maya Angelou and Malcolm X in Ghana, you know, which I thought was super cool. This piece, before I go there. So yeah, Stronger Together, that's the name of the collection. Yeah, Stronger Together. Stronger Together. We All We Got. This is the only cut and sewn piece in a collection. It is pinstriped, as you can see. This is probably my favorite. I'm trying to think about what to say. But my bad. It's like my favorite joint. You know what I mean? It's my favorite joint right here. But I want to kind of like put a vintage vibe to it. Which I kind of like. Which is why I added the felt letters or whatever. But it's hand sewn, handmade. I'm gonna put it online tomorrow. Whole collection is gonna go online with this. This is like made to order. So you know, if you do want one of these, I'm gonna have to make it for you. You know, made to order. Alright. And then this tee right here, Nas. So Nas is like one of my favorite rappers, and I. the original Nas graphic was like, I think it said like Nas, One Love, you know what I mean? And I grew up heavy on Nas, like even Belly. Belly was like, the one scene in Belly, I got a picture over there too. The one scene in Belly where like Nas is talking to Shorty in the projects that like, that's like wilding, he like smoking the backwoods, shooting niggas, you know what I'm saying? And Nas is like giving him advice on how to just elevate and kind of like not get caught up in a lot of the petty shit that always like stuck with me, and it showed me what big brothers are supposed to be like. So all of that kind of like falls under the We All We Got, family first, keep the family first, you know what I'm saying, act. So I did that in two colorways, did it in red as well. Yep, and Kwame Nkrumah. So he's like Africa's golden boy, you know what I'm saying? Like right when Ghana got his independence in 57, he got the nickname Osagyefo, which means redeemer. You know what I mean? Because like he was the president of Ghana, and Ghana was the first country that got their independence. So that was like a huge deal. They got the independence from Britain. Yeah, so. And the cool thing about Kwame Nkrumah too is that although he passed in 72, a lot of his work and a lot of his manifest that he created before he passed is still happening in Ghana right now. So they're still like taken away from like a lot of the ideas that he has. So as far as like road infrastructure, education, you know, Kwame Nkrumah was really about like trying to bring the whole Africa together. I think one of his ideas was trying to make a United States of Africa. All right. Then we almost done. And then the One Love joint. So Bob Marley, like I said before, I was one of those kids that like stayed going to the African Fest. You know, I used to perform at the African Fest. My parents used to take me. And I used to always see Bob Marley t-shirts. You know what I'm saying? Like, no matter who was wearing them. Like, everybody always had one. So I automatically knew that Bob Marley was, like, a figure that if I put on the shirt, people would gravitate towards it. Plus, I love Bob Marley's, like, his whole ideology. You know what I'm saying? I grew up listening to Bob Marley. My parents played it. And he's just one of those people that really is about, like, love, you know what I'm saying? If you ever watch like a Bob Marley interview, he's super chilled out, probably like smoking a joint and telling you how, you know, we got to come together, you know what I'm saying, and defeat oppression, you know what I mean? So all that shit relates to me. And yep, that's the clip. So we did the clips on white, and yeah, that's it. That's the whole collection, y'all. It's out tomorrow, you know what I'm saying? Collection's out tomorrow, online and in store at Fat Tiger. And I'm dropping a lookbook. Dropping a lookbook tonight. So, you know, like it if you like it. You know what I'm saying? Retweet it if you want to retweet it. you know, but no pressure. No pressure at all. And yeah, y'all can, like, once we get done or whatever, y'all can kind of take a look at the room. The idea that I wanted to kind of express with this room was, like, you know, this collection is like a, it's a piece of my story. So I kind of, like, wanted y'all to, like, read my diary, or like just like a visual diary. It's a diary of Des Money, you know what I'm saying? So this whole wall is like, you know, everything that I was inspired by at the time of this collection. It's pictures of my daughter, you know, my new baby girl. Everything. And obviously this side is the merchandise area.
Yo, could yes, you sir. Talk about, like, that the world blow up thing? My question is, like that's obviously, like, super gang affiliated.
Right.
Like, how do you, like, deal with, like, the fear of utilizing something that is, could be, like, looked down upon, or, like straight retaliation for?
Right.
Like, I deal with graffiti in my art, and it's like, I got guys saying, like, don't tell people what you're doing, like, don't show that. Like, don't work with performance art.
Right. I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, if the message has love in it, you know, it's going to do what it's supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I don't care if you're a gangster. I don't care if you're, like, the biggest, baddest murderer or whatever. If you see something that, like, touches your heart, you know what I'm saying, you're going to relate to it. You know what I mean? I used to kind of, I'm not going to front. For me to take that gang phrase, whatever, and to flip it, you know, I sat with it. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, damn, should I do this? Is it gonna get misinterpreted? But it's just like, that's what you go. That's, as an artist, that's the risk you take. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're gonna have people that don't understand it, but you're also gonna have people that understand that shit to be like, bro, that shit crazy. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like, you know, you do it for those people. You know what I'm saying? And I think with the energy that you put into it, and the energy that those people that resonate towards it can help kind of, you know, kind of sway or defeat that negative shit. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I say do it. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it is, just do that shit. Especially if it's coming from right here. You know what I'm saying?
So, like, as far as, like, upcoming creatives, I think... right now with the Instagram world and everything like that, social media, I think that it does kind of create this idea that these things come easy, like that there's not a lot of work to be done, or a lot of passion to go into what you're doing. Like, there's this big conversation that streetwear is harder now to do because people are throwing anything on a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. So for an up and coming creative, like, what would your advice be, to kind of get through that, like, blurry phase of, like, how do I know that this is what I should really, really go for?
That's a great question. 'Cause I mean, like, when we all started brands, I think it was kind of definitely pre Instagram, you know what I'm saying? Maybe at the beginning of Twitter, but definitely pre Instagram, you know? And, when we were doing brands in Chicago, like I said, like, me and my two cousins, Joe, Terrell, maybe Brandon Bro, there wasn't a lot of people having brands in Chicago for real. So I think now is a very, very tough time in streetwear because the market is super saturated. You know what I'm saying? And not only that, not only is the market super saturated, but it's like everybody's constantly posting. You know what I mean? So it's like it's so much information to receive, you know what I mean? But my philosophy is that, you know, if you make something good, if you're making something good, if you're working on something good, and if you believe in it, it's gonna catch, you know what I'm saying? Even if it's just like a special niche, you know what I'm saying? And it's not a mainstream situation or whatever, it's gonna catch if it's good, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's just that you got to believe in it, though. You know, I think, because I think a lot of times we might put too much weight on how many likes we get or how many retweets we get, which is important for certain things. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that, like, you know, I don't want to devalue the interaction you get from online, because, you know, we look at Fat Tiger. We are an internet store. You know what I'm saying? I was just talking, me and Terrell was talking about it. You know, we are an internet store. Like, a lot of our following comes from, people know about us through Twitter, through Instagram. You know what I'm saying? But we also do real work. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just kind of, we present our things on Instagram and social media. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think it just goes back to making good shit. You know what I'm saying? Good quality shit that you feel resonates with you and things that you're confident to put out. You know what I'm saying? That and presentation. I would say that. Presentation is, I think, is another thing that a lot of young creatives should invest research and time in. You know, you got to figure out how to separate yourself, you know what I'm saying, when it comes to how you want to, you know, market an item, you know what I'm saying, how you want to tell a story or something. You know, you can't, you probably, you know, just taking a picture, putting it on the floor, you know what I'm saying, that may not be the best way. There's nothing wrong with that, you know what I'm saying, but how do you spice that up? How do you get somebody that doesn't know nothing about your brand to get excited, you know what I'm saying, about that piece or whatever it is that you're putting out, you know what I mean? So I don't know if that helped, but, it's, you know, hopefully it did. Hopefully it did.
Yo, so appreciate you sharing your story.
Thank you, bro.
I think you did a really good, great job at it.
Thank you.
And so, you know, Chicago is a pretty cool scene to be a part of. But you basically travel to your home country to capture your story and deliver it through different pieces of, you know, clothing. So I was wondering if you could speak on the importance of creatives kind of getting out and traveling and how much that can impact just the way you move forward with your designing and thought process.
Right. That's a great question. You got to travel, man. Like, it took me a very long time to kind of, like, figure out how I was going to fund the trip. You know what I'm saying? I had to, like, you know, bust my ass. Like, crazy thing about this, too, I didn't mention it, but when I decided to go to Ghana and I got some bread for it, I was so thirsty to go that I just bought a one-way ticket. I didn't even have enough bread at the time to get a round trip. You know what I'm saying? And that's a very wild, risky decision. You know what I'm saying? It's a very wild choice. But in my mind, I was like, I really want to make this happen. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to do what I got to do to get that other end. You know what I'm saying? And I made it work. But to answer your question, that's how important I view traveling. You know what I'm saying? Being for a creative, you know what I mean? Because as a creative, you know, you have to create, you know what I'm saying? And to create, you got to continuously be inspired. You got to see new things. You know, you got to talk to different people. You know, you just have to continue to feed yourself. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes just staying in Chicago, you know, seeing the same thing, you know, might not be what you need. You know what I mean? So I think for young creatives and just for people in general, like, it's good to get out. It's good to go see some new stuff. Like, you know, in January, it's cold here. It's good to go to Jamaica, go do something different. You know what I'm saying? Just to, like, you know, just to experience something new. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like as creatives, you know, the more we experience, the more we know, you know, the more we're able to kind of spit out and comment on and express ourselves. So I think it's important, man. I'm trying to go back to Ghana in December. Joe was just telling me he might be doing a pop-up in London. I'm trying to go to London. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to keep it going. I have a daughter now, so I'm also trying to be very considerate of that. You know what I'm saying? I have a daughter and a girlfriend, so I'm like, I don't want to be gone all the time. But, you know, I'm also still, you know, trying to make my dreams happen. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, it's certain connections and certain networks that you might not just be able to reach through Instagram. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, you gotta be person to person. You know what I'm saying? Even piggybacking on what the young lady asked me earlier, as creators too, I think you got to do a lot of face to face. You know what I'm saying? Like, just don't stay behind a phone or stay behind a computer. You know what I'm saying? Go meet people, go shake hands, and then document that. You know what I'm saying? To me, that's realer. You know what I'm saying? Then, like, just tweeting or, you know what I'm saying, just, you know, being on live type shit. Last question. Yep. Yes, sir.
How you doing, man? Jahad Keparu.
Hey, that's my bro. That's my brother right
local
there.
Chicago artist, et cetera. Nice to meet you guys. It's a two-part question. Is that cool? It's real short, real boom, boom, pow. So I guess the first piece for me would be, as a entry-level creative coming in a couple years back, what would you have done differently? If you could speak to, like, a younger Des, what would that convo look like a little bit? And the second part of that question being, what kind of growth and change do you want to see for yourself this upcoming year?
That's some good-ass questions, bro. Right. So that's asking my man's Jahad. dear brother of mine. He also has a, sorry to do this promo and shit, but you know what I'm saying? He got a fire book that he's working on called How to Be a Cool Black Guy. I have like a prototype of it over there. That's his baby picture right there. He didn't know I was going to plug him, but it's actually a fire book. You know what I'm saying? And I'm working with him to make sure that the book comes out and it does well. But to answer your question though,
all day. I love.
If I'm just talking to a younger Diz, I think I would just probably tell him to be more confident and figure out ways to just get your money right. You know what I'm saying? Because I think a lot of times, you know, being creative and being young, you kind of think the money just going to come somehow. You know what I'm saying? But, like, you got to figure out ways to keep money around you. But that means working a 9-to-5. Because when I was younger, and I hate that I was like this, I used to knock 9-to-5s. Like, man, I ain't working no job. I'm not working for nobody. You know what I'm saying? You know, but I don't think that's the most effective mentality. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's tough working a 9-to-5 and then after that trying to figure out, you know, trying to get the energy to go chase your dreams or whatever. But if you really want something, you got to figure out how to do that. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I probably would have kept my teaching job for a little bit longer if I was, because I was teaching for a second at Betty Shabazz, but shit was cracking on the photography side. I was making some money. You know what I'm saying? I thought, like, hey, this gonna keep coming. You know what I'm saying? But I wasn't prepared financially. You know what I'm saying? So I would suggest that younger dads try to figure out some more secure money situations. And as I'm getting older, you know, I'm just trying to be a better businessman. You know, as well as just being able to multitask more. You know, something that I learned from are y'all familiar with Virgil Abloh? Yeah, so he's also from Ghana too. But one thing I heard him say in the interview is that, like, the moment he decided to not be perfect anymore, you know what I'm saying, and like, or not try to be perfect, and realize that he isn't perfect, you know, that was the point of time when he was like, all right, shit, I can do 20 things at once. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's one thing I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to figure out how to do 30 things at once, but still be full, still be attentive, you know what I'm saying, and still be a good dad, still be a good business partner, still be an attentive creative, you know what I'm saying. So just trying to figure out how to lock in every day, you know what I'm saying, because I think that's the hardest thing, man, as a creative, as an artist. You got to figure out how to get yourself in the zone all the time, you know what I'm saying. Like, feel like it's always distractions, whether it's family, whether you need some money, whether, you know, it's, you know, the inspiration out there. You got to just figure out how to stay locked in. And when you're not locked in, what you got to do to get back locked in and, you know, get to that point where you producing content and you executing and you accomplishing goals. You know what I mean? So I think that's it. I ain't trying to talk your ears off. It's like 9 o'clock. Thank y'all for coming out, man. This was love, man. Appreciate it.